Welcome to this week's episode of Behind the Badge, Illinois. I'm David Hochberg, your host. We've got Chief of Police from O'Fallon, Illinois, which is a town right outside of St. Louis. Chief Briggleman, we've got, Briggleman.
Yes.
All right, I got Kirk Briggleman down in O'Fallon, Illinois. I've got Chief Bird, returning chief from DeKalb, Illinois. And we've got a special guest, Kenny Winslow, the executive director of the ILACP. We're going to jump right into it. This portion of the show is sponsored by me at Team Hochberg. If you're looking to purchase a new home, refinance your existing home, give me a call, 855-56-DAVID, or go to 56David.com. And if you're a sponsor interested in joining me or taking over the sponsorship of this show, you could give me a call at that same number, 855-563-2843, which is 56David.com. All right, gentlemen, we're talking this week about how departments are structured and how different parts of the state have different needs, different wants, different desires. Kirk is down in more of a rural area. You know, you're up there in DeKalb, Dave. Chief Bird, you know, it's a growing town. I went to school there in the 80s. I know a lot about DeKalb. And we'll come back to you, Kenny, to talk about how the ILACP is supporting the different chiefs' initiatives to grow their police force and to expand as well. So since you're the veteran on the call here, Dave, we'll start with you. When you took over as chief of the DeKalb Police Department, what's the one thing that you saw how the department was structured, and what have you done since you were there?
So I think, one of the biggest things for me coming from state police, where you had an organizational chart that was extremely robust. I was a colonel of patrol. I had two lieutenant colonels. I had five majors. It went, down to 22 captains. The chart was just huge. And, so that chain of command was extremely lengthy. One issue you have with that is that things move a little slower because everything goes up the chain. It takes a while to get there. It takes a while to get back. So, even some of the easiest decisions would take a little time to get to the people who actually have to, affect these changes or these decisions. So I think that was one of the first things that when I took over at DeKalb, I was like, wow, you can move fast here. I have a deputy chief and four commanders, and so we move fast. We talk, we make decisions, we get things out, no problem. ISP, it took a while. Even for things just to get to my desk and for me to return it and make a decision for everything to circle back. So I could see where captains would get a little frustrated with the state police just because of the time that it would take to get through the organizational hierarchy with the state police. So that was one of the biggest change I saw, Dave, was just how fast decisions could be made and actually be, effective. And you could put those things into place pretty quickly. So that was one of the first things that I noticed. Just the organizational chart alone, makes a difference when you're dealing with a smaller department compared to a department of the size of the state police or even Kenny was chief at Springfield. He had a pretty good size organizational chart there with him. The PDs like Aurora, where they have over 200 officers or more, their chart gets pretty long as well. But for me, that's one of the first things I saw, Dave. I actually enjoyed it. I'm not going to lie. I don't miss the red tape of the state police. I do not. I love that somebody can walk in your office and say, chief, we need to purchase A, B, C, or D, and you can say, go ahead and do it, and then it's done. That was definitely not the case with the state police. You couldn't probably buy staples. It'd probably take you 5 days to order a box of staples. It was just ridiculous. So So I would think that was the big difference for me, Dave, when I took over at the PD.
All right, let's go down to O'Fallon with Chief Brigham. I get it right? Brigham.
Brigham, yes.
Right. Okay, I got it right. It took me 17 minutes here. All right, so Chief Brigham. All right, so you've got a smaller town. O'Fallon is not the size of Chicago. It's not the size of Highland Park, where another one of our co-hosts is Chief Lou Jogman. It's probably a little smaller than DeKalb. How are you set up? And explain to our listeners what a force you're. So how big is your force, first off, and how are you set up?
Yeah, so we're actually one of the like probably a mid sized department through the state of Illinois. We've got 50 officers.
Okay.
So we're in the Metro East, which is suburbs of St. Louis. We are very fortunate to be a growing town. And have that. And I've been with our organization for 25 years, so it's really all I've known. But when you look through the Metro East, you've got towns that have about, probably one of the bigger departments is Belleville with about 80 officers. But then you've got towns that are right next to us with 15 officers. So, the structures are not going to be anywhere like a Chicago or an Aurora or a Springfield, but they're all pretty much the same. So, with us in O'Fallon, I've got I'm the chief, and I've got a couple captains. I've got several lieutenants and then sergeants and then patrol staff, investigations. And what Chief Bird said is spot on, is that when you have that smaller organization, it cuts down that red tape. It allows for those officers to be able to bring their ideas up to the front. It allows you to grow your leaders within that organization, because they do have more of a say in what happens, because, the open door policy isn't just talk. It actually happens, in departments of our size, the chief's door is open, and you're able to come in and you're able to talk to the chief, and you're able to give ideas and to have those ideas take fruition rather quickly, which is really fortunate. And I think that's the norm really in Illinois. Up in Chicago, it's your Chicago PD and Illinois State Police. But realistically, the norm for most of Illinois and most of our departments is you're going to have small departments, and you're going to have departments run by a chief and maybe a sergeant, and then the rest are patrol officers. So with us, I do have a nice command staff that helps me run the organization. A couple of captains, and like I said, one runs the patrol side of the house and operations. The other runs the civilian and the investigation side, and it kind of filters down. Most of the departments in Illinois are going to be set up as basically a one or a two man shop, where they're kind of running all of the administration, and they're also working chiefs. So there's a real interesting dichotomy there between different departments within the state.
All right, let's go over to you, Kenny. As the executive director of the ILACP, prior to that, you were, as a couple of chiefs had already mentioned, the chief of police down Springfield. How big was that force? And talk, you put two hats on here. As a former chief, how was Springfield set up? And as the executive director of the ILACP, what are you doing to help support chiefs throughout the state, like Chief Bird and Chief Brigham, set up their forces?
Yeah, thanks very much. When I was at Springfield, obviously, we were about 285 officers when I first started, and as the economy flowed, the headcount flowed. We went from 285 in, say, 1995 to 2010, down to 225 because of the recession, and all the way down to 198, and then back up today, we're about 270. We were probably about the fourth or fifth largest department state. Typically, it was always Chicago PD, Cook County Sheriff's Department, State Police, and then you got into the municipal department. You had your Aurora, your Joliet, and we're about the same as them, typically, somewhere in that around 250. A lot of people were about 250 there. But, I think a lot of times when you look at structure, it really depends on the size of the population that you're serving. It's really what it comes down to. We were pretty much, when I became chief, we had four divisions. I streamlined it because of that the recession and the reduced manpower. We streamlined down to three divisions. Typically, we called it operations, which the public would say is pretty much the uniform division, the people that are out there responding to calls for service. And there were some specialty units that fell underneath that, such as your SWAT teams, your neighborhood police officers, and K-9, and everything else that goes underneath there. And then your other side of the house was your criminal investigations, and that included everything from your regular detectives to your undercover narcotics units to your street crimes units, et cetera. And then you moved over to what I combined admin services and professional standards together. So all that fell over there, and that's everything that's exciting about law enforcement. That's all of our records board people. That's all of our people who actually make the department move forward that nobody wants to do. And but, you know, every department's a little different, but I think if you look at your mid-sized departments and our, say, are your larger to mid-sized departments as far as municipalities, they're all structured pretty much the same, whether that's Aurora, Joliet, Naperville, Rockford, we're all pretty much the same, Peoria. Structured the same there. So again, what I learned as chief is that you really come down to it and you have to empower your men and women to make decisions. You have to push that decision-making down so it doesn't take so long to make a decision. When our men and women need to do something or they need a resource, they should have the ability to do that. And so we try to push that down to our frontline supervisors. So you reduce the level, you know, keep us in the loop. If it's something really big, then obviously it's got to come up the chain of command. But if it's something that they need to get done, it shouldn't have to rise all the way to the top. So you got to, we didn't really flatten the organization, but we pushed decision-making down to those who needed it to kind of, you can't wait a month for a decision on, you know, stuff that's affecting our men and women day in and day out. They got to just be able to do it. And so I always looked at it as that, hey, I trust my men and women to go out there and make good decisions. I trust them to go out there and give them the authority that if they had to, in the worst case, you know, use deadly force, then I should be able to trust them to know what they need to do out there as far as purchasing things, as far as making decisions to help resource allocation or to make the department run more efficient or streamlined. So that's how I kind of looked at it. When it comes to
the ILOCP, what are you guys doing to support the chiefs throughout the state?
Well, we try to support them every way. So you got to look, remember, as Kurt said, I believe there's over 400 departments that have less than 10 officers in the state of Illinois. That's a huge portion of our state. Some of these departments are one and two man departments or women departments. You know, it's a working chief and a part-time officer or two. And that's all it is out there. And they don't have the resources of the larger departments. So what we try to do is provide professional development for all of our people. We try to provide them resources. We try to be a resource for them when it comes to legislative initiatives, education. We put on different training conferences throughout the year to help them. But we also try to be that networking and sharing of information. Who can we connect with each other to help them? You know, another thing we try to do is we try to mentor new chiefs. You know, we want each chief to succeed. If a chief succeeds, we all succeed. If a chief fails, we all fail. The bottom line is we're about professional service for our communities. And so we do everything in our power to help them. You know, we take on different grants to provide resources to them. You know, with the new NIBRS conversion here a couple of years ago, we did a laptop grant to help our smaller departments who didn't even have technology. They were still handwriting reports. They are still handwriting NIBRS reports. They have to go to the state for crime stats. So working in the way we possibly can.
So Dave, up in DeKalb, you have patrol, obviously, right? I've been up there. I was up at Northern a couple weeks back and saw the cars, you know, your squads rolling around DeKalb. What other different branches, for lack of a better term, in the hierarchical structure, that's a big word, hierarchical. Anything over two syllables, boys, it's challenging.
Right, Dave?
Right, yeah. And that's my middle name, challenging. My gosh. So what's the org chart look like? You know, do you have investigations? Do you have a drug unit? Do you have dogs? Let our listeners know how DeKalb set up, and then we'll go down to O'Fallon with Kirk to learn about how his police force is set up down there.
Yeah, so we do. We have the same, like I said, like Kenny and Kirk both said, a lot of these things are pretty consistent across the board. You know, we do have a patrol division. We have our investigative division. We have our communications division. We have our administrative division, which where a lot of our civilians work in. So you're talking about your records division. So people come in, had any copies of crash reports, they need to fill out, they want to request a FOIA, they put in a FOIA request in. So we have civilians that handle that. So they are all a part of that organizational chart there. We do have a tactical unit in DeKalb, and they also serve as our narcotics unit and our gang unit. So they kind of wear multiple hats. We have a three-person canine unit, which is we have the biggest canine unit, in at least in DeKalb County. The one thing we don't so the way we do collaborate, though, and it's smaller with the smaller departments where you won't see with some of the bigger departments. So meaning CPD, they have their own SWAT team. ISP has their own SWAT team. So when you get to the smaller departments, you really can't afford to, you know, support your own team. At least when you get into a level, at least where I'm at, where you got 80 officers and, you know, it gets tough. So what you do then, we, you know, we collaborate. So we have a county SWAT team. So we got members from DeKalb. You got members from DeKalb County. You got members from Sycamore, NIU. I mean, you know, across the board. And then that's how you, you know, it's basically a force multiplier for the county, because otherwise you really, no one entity could afford or support a SWAT team alone. So we have to kind of co-create that, which we've done, and it's been up and running for years. And you'll see that in other smaller jurisdictions. You'll see the same type situation. I know Peoria has their own team, you know, so they're, you know, when you have a certain amount of officers, you know, you get up to around 200, 300 officers, you can support it. But when you're talking about 80, 90 officers, even up to 100, you know, the best bet is probably to combine forces and handle it that way. And we need that team because of, as you know, we are a college town. I mean, we had an active shooter situation, you know, over 16 years ago at NIU. So you need that, you know, component in the county that can respond to those type of situations. So we just, you know, like I said, we collaborated, co-created this, and it's been working extremely well. So, and we also have a task force, a major crimes task force, same concept. You pull from different departments, and then that way it forms as a, like I said, a force multiplier. You all of a sudden, you have a robust task force to handle some major crimes or some major homicides or some detailed homicides or, you know, some cold cases or whatever the case may be, officer involved shootings. Sometimes these task force handle those as well. And so that's how you do it when you're in a small department. You just collaborate and you co-create and you put it all together and you work together as a unit. So you'll see a lot of that too, Dave, with the smaller departments throughout, you know, the state of Illinois. You'll see the
same. Let me ask you this question. Yep. And I'm going to throw it over to Kirk next. If something comes up, a drug bust, sure. Is it low enough in the command that you've got enough structure set up that if you're going to go bust a drug, you know, drug dealers, is it getting to your desk or are they going and then reporting back to you after the drug bust is done?
So in most cases, you know, they're notifying their commander who runs their division. At some point, they're going to get it to me. And like I said, you know, there's some things that I can wait for. You know what I mean? You know, if it's something that, you know, it's imperative and timing, you know, is of the essence, then, you know, you go. And just like Kenny said earlier, you know, you just trust your guys to make good decisions and handle it. A lot of things happen over the cover of night. I'm in the bed asleep. You know, make the decisions. I pay you to make the decisions. So if we have to make the decisions, especially at our rank and at our level, then we really failed because at the end of the day, they should be making the decisions. So so in that case, though, Dave, sure, they go. I trust them. They already, I mean, they've been trained extremely well. They have amazing leadership abilities. I pick the right people. That's key, is picking the right people to run those divisions, run those units, so you can sleep at night. You know, you should be able to wake up and say, hey, Chief, we had this last night. It was covered. This is what happened. Now, there are some cases, Dave, where, you know, you should, what requires immediate notification. They need to wake you up. I mean, if you get an officer involved shooting, they're calling. And they should. I mean, you need to be up and you need to be dressed and ready to roll and get to the PD, get to the hospital. I dealt with that a lot with ISP. When I was the colonel of patrol, we had four in the line of death, in the line of duty deaths with the state police. So, I mean, you're going to get those notifications. I mean, those, you know, you're going to get immediate notification on things like that. But things like narcotics arrests, you know, they can move on those. Some things require, if they're going to do a search warrant, I mean, which is going to be something that's going to be more of an organized situation where you're going to bring in your SWAT team, you know, and they're going to have a briefing before the actual operation, you know, I'll be at those, you know, but anything just, you know, this current proactive stop, you know, you go, you do what you got to do. So it just comes down to leadership and picking the right people to run your divisions. I'm sure Kenny and Kirk will attest to that as well. It really is important you pick strong leaders to run the department when you're not there.
Got it. Chief Brigham, explain a little deeper how your hierarchy is set up, and, you know, same question that Chief Bird just answered. You know, how quick are they getting to you in order for them to make decisions, or is it similar down in O'Fallon as it is up there in DeKalb?
Yeah, it's similar. It really depends on your community and what's expected from your community. You know, like a drug bust is, you know, not that we have a whole lot of them down here, but it's a little more common, you know, and we have a homicide. We don't have many homicides. So obviously that's obviously going to make it up to my desk really quick. We talk about first responders, and I sometimes have trouble calling myself a first responder because I'm really like a third or a fourth responder as a chief, because I'm not out there on the front lines. I got a buddy who anytime we go out to dinner and somebody finds out I'm a police officer, they ask me, say, "Oh, thank you for your service." And he chimes in and goes, "You don't have to thank him. He's administration." "He's administration. You don't have to thank him." And I'm like, "Oh, all right. Well, fair enough." Yeah. You know, so, you know, I'm close enough to what's going on, but still far enough away that I'm not out there day to day. You know, when we talk about what people know about police departments, right, is they know what a police officer is. You know, I ask a lot of friends, "What do you do for a living?" I can't explain it. They can't even explain what they do for a living. A police officer is pretty easy. A teacher, a police officer, a detective. You know, I think our patrol officers, you know, everybody's got a patrol division, and they're really the backbone of the organization. They're going to handle everything. It is probably the coolest job in the world to be a patrol officer, to be able to go out and kind of get in people's business, you know, because they bring you into their business. For somebody who likes to be around people and who likes to see what's going on, a patrol officer is kind of where it's at, because they can really take things as far as they want. You know, so we have a patrol division, you know, set up just like anybody else. The majority of our police officers are going to work patrol. If you ask some of our people in our citizens academies and in our community, how many patrol officers do you have on the street at the time? They'll be like, "Oh, you probably got 30 officers out there." And I'm like, "Oh, I wish." No, I've got between 5 and 8 out there at any time. So, you know, there's not a whole lot depending on what it is, but, you know, it's, when you have that high visibility, we have those officers and you're moving around and you're patrolling your streets. So we have a patrol division, and then we also have an investigations division, a detective. You know, with a lot of departments, you know, people think, "Oh, that's a promotion. You get it, you know," or something like that. With us and a lot of departments, it's actually not a promotion. It's just an assignment, and it's just something different. You know, your patrol divisions are usually generally over half of your department, maybe 60% of your department. And then your specialty divisions, like your investigations, are going to be probably the equivalent of one of your patrol shifts, 5 or 6 officers with us. And then in addition, we have other special assignments, like we have school resource officers. We have undercover, we have narcotics, we have somebody detached to the DEA, somebody detached to a MEGSI unit, which is a drug unit, that's a regional drug unit. Like Chief Bird talked about, those force multipliers that out there, you get together with other departments and you get involved in those things. And then you kind of move up, and then you have your sergeants, and then your lieutenants. that handle some of more of your administrative staff. And like Chief Bird said, and like you said, what kind of makes it to my desk? A lot of times for me, I have a nice, kind of a level system there and a buffer zone to what they know, what they can handle and what's important to our community. And really, I think that comes down to it. Because if it's, you know, those relationships that you have, unfortunately, we have to have relationships with our politicians, our mayors and our city council, because some things that are really important to them are not necessarily very important to us. And
Want to give an example of a recent example and name the elected official that was asking you to do it?
Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, it's about balancing. So, you know, some of the things that make it to our level is quality of life issues, you know, and you wouldn't think that those would make it up to the chief's level. But those quality of life issues oftentimes are at our level because we're getting asked about that from our politicians, because they're getting asked that from the residents because it's important to them. So, you know, I think I kind of say this, you know, what hits my office a lot is speeding complaints in neighborhoods and stuff. And I try to remind my mayor, I said, that's a really good thing that speeding complaints in neighborhoods is a top priority, that we're not getting complaints from our neighborhoods about robberies or homicides or carjackings or anything like that. So I have to continually remind myself that, yeah, we live in a pretty good community and I'm okay with that hitting my desk at this point.
We heard a lot about leadership and how the chiefs, Bergelman and Bird, have to rely on their staff, Kenny. And you had mentioned earlier about training. Can you dive a little deeper what the ILACP is doing from, you know, the tip of Illinois up in Zion all the way down to Carbondale and all points in between that you all are doing at ILACP to develop the officers and develop the training and through the training and the leadership so the Chiefs Kirk and David don't have to worry about doing everything themselves and have a good pool of qualified officers, law enforcement professionals, ready to take those leadership positions under them?
Well, they got to worry about it, to be honest with you, because we don't do a lot for the patrol officer ranks. You know, that's something they have to do is the training through their MTUs or mobile training units or through their departments. What we try to do is train the chiefs. We put on every year a new chief course. We have command scholarships for those who are coming through the ranks to attend Northwestern School of Police Staff Command. We develop opportunities for them by bringing training in from the outside to help them. We put on 2 training conferences per year. But it's all geared towards senior command. When I say that, I'm talking about chiefs. I'm talking about assistant chief, deputy chiefs, commanders, et cetera, your senior management of the department. And sometimes, depending on the side of the department, that senior management might be a sergeant. It might be a sergeant after, so even them. But we try to stay relevant on all the topics. The law changes for them, keep them educated. And then we try to be their voice over at the Capitol for those kind of things, you know. And whatever they say, you know, we try to do a survey every couple of years about what are the important topics for you. We have a board of officer meeting every Wednesday where we talk about, hey, what should we be looking to bring in? What can we do to help our men and women? And what is the hot topic of the day? So we try to stay on top of all those issues. And some of it's training, some of it's, you know, other things just about like recruitment and retention. We talk about that a lot right now. What can we do to help our people recruit and, retain people going forward? We all steal from each other when it comes to departments right now in this recruitment crunch. You know, we're all stealing everybody's officers to go somewhere. And I think that, you know, something that both Dave and Kurt said was very vital for our smaller departments, because I constantly hear from our smaller departments, I can't keep anybody. I can't retain them. They're going to these bigger departments. They're going there not necessarily for money, which is a part of the equation, but they're going there for opportunity to grow professionally. So when you have these collaborations they're talking about, whether that's a joint narcotics unit or a joint SWAT team or whatever, they're looking for opportunity to grow. They love working in maybe in their hometown as a town of 10,000 people, but they want that opportunity to be a detective. They want to be that opportunity to be an accident reconstruction officer. And by doing these collaborations, these joint teams, it keeps them sharp. It gives them an opportunity. And it gives them the skills they need that they can bring back to their department later on, you know. So you got to look at it from that aspect of it, too. So, you know, something I was going to say when Kurt was talking, you know, it brings back memories. And Dave kind of brought it up. We used to call those acute political emergencies when they ended up on your desk and you were like, what the heck is this and why is this on my desk? And it goes back to relative. What is relative to your department, to your community? Something that you as a police chief may not see as a huge thing, you know. Prime example, when I was chief back in 2013, I was a fairly new chief. We had a big snowstorm and everybody's calling my phone, calling my cell phone. There's these three cars parked on the snow emergency route. You need to get these moved. I'm like, it's like 1 a.m. in the morning and you're calling me. Why again? Okay. We'll get somebody out there. Otherwise, snow plow around them or they can tow them, one of the other guys. But, you know, you just don't know what's going to fall on your desk, you know. And, you know, it really is the expectations of your administration, whether that's your city manager, your mayor, or your alder persons. You know, I always tell people that, you know, being a chief is like walking a tightrope. And it's a four-headed monster is what I used to call it. I said, you got to keep your people happy within the organization. You got to keep your administration happy. You got to keep your city council happy. And you got to keep your citizens happy. You know, so you got to look at it from that. And I always tell chiefs, you know, you're never going to have all four happy at one time. It just ain't going to happen. You try to keep at least three of the four happy. If you get two out of four not happy with you, then you better start looking around and thinking what you're doing and reevaluating, because pretty soon you ain't going to have a job, you know, so you got to make some changes there. So, you know, when you talk about the life of a chief, you know, in an organization, I don't care how big it is, how small it is. I'm from Springfield, very political city, a mirror of just a micro of the state. The state capital here, we're just a political entity. That's how it is, you know, and I served as chief of almost 9 years. In 27 years, I had seven chiefs. Okay. So that shows you how long the other chief served. And one of those other chiefs served for about 5.5. So that just shows you the history in my department was about chief serves a couple of years and then is gone. That's just the way it was. So you got to be able to survive and thrive in those political environments to help your men and women. So why we make light of it, we think about priorities, you know, the reality is we got to keep everybody happy and we got to provide the best service possible. And what I might think is a priority may not be the priority to the community at that time.
All right. Well, thanks, Kenny. So I'm going to throw it back to, we're going to finish up this topic and then transfer over to the Bulletproof Vest initiative that I've got coming up on my show tomorrow on WGN. But I'll end it with this, with Chief Byrd and Chief Brigham. If you had a gold ticket, Chiefs, and you could add one thing to your department that you currently don't have, or strengthen something that you currently have that is a weakness because you don't have the resources, and you had unlimited resources to tap into and write a check, what would that one thing be, Chief Byrd?
Wow. So, I mean, I could take the easy way out on this, you know, and I wouldn't be wrong with this one. You know, we all need more personnel. I mean, but that's, I mean, you ask any chief that, most of them are going to say that. I mean, of course they would like more personnel. That's a softball, man. You're going to, you know, you can bang that out every time. Everybody's going to say it. But I would say probably beyond that, I think at the end of the day, it really is about, you know, equipment. I mean, a lot of the guys, I mean, the first thing they're going to ask for, man, we wish we more had more help. Usually the number two thing is, you know, we want the best equipment. We want the best equipment. We want things that won't fail on us. And I know Kenny and Kirk are talking about this as well. You know, our tasers, man, the lifespan on those seems to get lesser and less. They want unbelievable body cameras because they know now that they be, you know, we are held at the scrutiny on police officers is unbelievable. So, I mean, we want the best equipment. We don't want any, you know, we want the best cars. They, you know, I mean, the best weapons. They want, and then they want the best training. They want to be trained. People don't understand that. Like, when you talk to people, especially because we had some unbelievable, incidents that occurred that put us in a bad light. We all know what they are. But people don't understand. We want to be trained. These guys want to be the best they can be. They really do. So, like I said, I think those would be just a couple of things I would say, Dave. I mean, like I said, the softball one is manpower because, you know, they surely want it. And if you ask them, they like, shoot, if you can put another $1,000 in my check, that would be great. You know, I mean, of course, we already know we upside down when it comes to that. We pay $1 million to go watch Taylor Swift or whatever. And then, I mean, we won't pay our cops. We won't pay our our nurses, our teachers. So we upside down. It's always been that way with that. So I would say something. Yeah, I think that, you know, without saying the softball one, Dave, I think the next one would be really equipment. I think they want the best of the best.
All right, Chief Brigham, other than added police on the street that David Byrd just brought up, what would be your golden ticket if you had to bring to your police department in O'Fallon?
Well, I am a Taylor Swift fan, so. you know, we are actually working on something right now because, you know, you talk about bringing officers on and everybody's like, oh, give us more cops. But it's not always the need for more cops and more police on the street. It's the need to use their time more efficiently. And what we're seeing realistically in law enforcement is a huge shift towards mental health issues. If you ask any department, their mental health calls, their suicides, their mental health people in mental health crisis are just shooting through the roof. Whether it's drug induced or or biologically induced or however it's coming around, we're the ones that are dealing with this, and it's a no-win situation for police departments because not always have we the adequate training to deal with it. And then it's not that we don't do a really good job dealing with it in the time or right there at the time of crisis, but it's following up with that. So what I'm looking at doing is what some of the departments up north have done, and they've been doing for years, is adding embedded social workers into your organization. So we're researching that right now. We have an intern with our department that's doing some research for us. But having that embedded social worker within your organization, maybe not to respond to calls, because some departments do have social workers respond to calls because they have a team of them. But other than that, it's to provide those resources to your officers and to your community to try to reduce that recidivism. So, you know, what's better than trying to get rid of the mental health crisis or to trying to help that, so that way our officers aren't on the street having to deal with that time and time again, because those really are no-win situations. When you have a call in the middle of the night and somebody's just sitting there with a knife telling your officers, and we've got video, we've got body camera of this happening, where they're looking at an officer and say, shoot me, I'm going to make you kill me, I'm going to make you kill me. We have that happen in our small community several times a year. So I'm assuming this is happening all throughout the country, all throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
And those aren't making the news, where an officer successfully de-escalates that situation and that person ends up living. But what's making the news is the times when the officer does unfortunately have to pull that trigger and do that. So it's happening way more than that. So what I'd like to do, you know, golden ticket there, is to have that help on the back end. So that way, when these people are in crisis afterwards, we can get them the services that they need. The officers have somebody that they trust within the organization to reach out to that embedded social worker and say, hey, I'm having troubles with this, or I've been on 5 calls with this person in the last 6 months. What can we do? What can we do to help? So that way, we're not put in those situations again. It's a win-win for our officers. It's a win-win for our community. It's a win-win for our citizens, because then we're going to deal less with those problems. So that's kind of my golden ticket there. You know, it's a big ask. I don't know how successful we'll be with it, but we're going to keep trying.
So we have three now. We're using them, you know, and they actually go on call. So it's been working for us. Just to piggyback Kirk, we have 3 social workers, and they actually respond to calls. And it's been, you know, at least from my perspective, it's been probably, we've probably been doing it for a good 2 years now. I would say it's successful. I think we are making some headway there. We'll probably add more, you know, so we can have them on each shift. That's the goal. I would agree with that as well.
In the southern part of the state, it's a little more popular up north, but in the southern part of the state, I think the only department down here, you know, south of Springfield, that has a social worker embedded is Carbondale right now.
Yeah.
So it's
definitely a need. Yep.
It's not very, very, I shouldn't say it's not popular. It's just not done a lot down here. And I think that's the shift that you're going to see in law enforcement.
Agreed.
All I'm going to throw it to Kenny. So you got a golden ticket, Kenny. You're dealing with elected officials every single day throughout the state, the great state of Illinois, who have some support and respect law enforcement, and some have see law enforcement through a different lens. I think that's a politically correct way. Lou doesn't want to get political on these things, so I'll just say it. They see things through a different set of glasses that when the three of us or four of us put those lenses on, we're like, what the hell are you seeing, right? I mean, we don't see what you're seeing. So as the executive director of the ILACP, if you had a golden ticket that you could use within the state legislature of the great state of Illinois, I'm going to put you right in the center of the target here. What would that golden ticket be, Kenny?
Well, I would say, you know, it's kind of twofold. Access. Some people don't want to meet with you. They just want to take their bills and run with it. So access to get in and have those conversations we need to have, so we can have an opportunity to at least express our concerns, our issues, and try to educate how this is going to impact law enforcement as a whole. That may be positive. It may be negative. Who knows? I do believe that the vast majority of people at the Capitol, the elected officials, are there to do what they believe is the right thing. And they're there to support their constituents. With that said, sometimes they don't want to hear the other side of it. You know, here's a great plan, you know, or, you know, sometimes there's special interest. There's always special interest that's involved in it. But, you know, having those conversations, those hard conversations, and, you know, let me try to explain to you the why and the how. And then when it's over and done, if you still go your way, I understand that. That's your job. I get that, you know. But when some legislators don't want to meet, they don't want to make time, you got to sit there and, hate to say it, almost stalk them at the Capitol to try to make sure you get your 5 minutes, because you've called them five times trying to get a meeting. Their legislative aide said, hey, I'll get you in. And you're sitting here waiting. You know, it's a little frustrating. So if I would say anything, if I had a golden ticket, it would be just basically, hey, give us a chance to hear us out and express our concerns. I understand we go, usually there's middle ground there we can kind of compromise on. Not always, but usually there's middle ground there. But let me explain to you why and how it's going to impact us. And when it comes to law enforcement, I see laws every day with good intent, but negative impact for law enforcement, because they didn't think about how it's going to do it. They don't understand our side of the road and how this runs through it and how we would implement something like this. You know, and there's a lot of hot topic items, and you sit here and you're like, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't know how we can do this, because they think of it from a moral perspective. But we have to look at it from how can every department in the state, from 13,000 officers to one officer, enforce this. And there's a very good one out there right now dealing with the, you know, legislation where an officer would have to go into someone's house with a search warrant, remove firearms from somebody's house within 96 hours, and try and explain to the legislators, I understand why. I understand it's tied to OPs and violence, and we understand the concept of why and the need for it. We want everybody to be safe. But then explaining to them how we actually do search warrants, you know, and doing our homework, doing our background, who lives in the house, who's there, you know, am I hit a trap house? What am I doing? You know, I gave an example last week when we were meeting with one of the legislators about this bill, and I said, I get where you're coming from. We don't want nobody hurt. We want to protect the victims, but we have 96 hours, you know, and based on this law, who's going to serve the search warrant? Is it going to be the local PD? Is it going to be the sheriff's department? Is it going to be the state police? You know, not everybody has the same resources. And then that homework. And I told him, I said, where we get in trouble in law enforcement is when we don't do our homework, you know. And I explained to him how we do a search warrant. I said, let me take a very simple search warrant for you. Say a narcotic search warrant. I've already done my homework. I know who's in the house. I know if there's kids in the house. I know what time people come and go from the house. I got the description of the house. I got the address of the house. And I got eyes on the house. By the time I go in front of the judge and swear for the warrant, I'm ready to go. I got my team ready to go. We go back, we brief, and we go. But if I'm taking in this case, the ward of a civilian victim who maybe just started dating somebody and says, hey, the address is 1220 East Main, and it's actually 1220 West Main, I hit the wrong house because I'm going on the information in the search warrant, it's a bad day for everybody involved. So I think just taking that moment to kind of hear us out and hear why we have to change this to make it workable for everybody. That would be my thing I would ask.
All right, we're going to end this segment of Behind the Badge, Illinois. But before we do, I just wanted to put in a plug tomorrow. I know this is going to come out in a couple of weeks. So when you're viewing this or hearing this, we will have already done the Vestathon. I've taken it upon myself with Alderman Matt O'Shea from the 19th Ward in the city of Chicago. A lot of listeners might not know this, but the city of Chicago police officers for some effed up reason, and that's the official term, effed up reason, have to buy their own replacement bulletproof vest every 5 years. And this will be the fourth year that I've dedicated my radio show on WGN Homestorm Chicago to bring awareness to and raise funds for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation, which is an organization that supports families of officers who were injured while they were serving and who made the ultimate sacrifice, who were killed in the line of duty. And it just, for lack of a better term, pisses me off that the Chicago police officers have to buy their own replacement vests. So I've taken upon myself with Matt O'Shea to host a 3-hour radio show, dedicate one of our shows every year. And this year we've got Superintendent Snelling. We've got the wife, the widow of Commander Bauer, who was shot and killed in the Illinois State Building a number of years ago. We have the widow of a Chicago police officer who was killed in the line of duty while crossing the Metra tracks. He was crossing the tracks and a train came while he was chasing somebody down and got killed when he was struck by a train. So these are horrific events. Why we're not buying bulletproof vests for the officers of the city of Chicago, which I think all of you chiefs, we talked prior to the recording of this, you don't know any large, medium-sized, even small forces throughout the state that aren't buying them unless they're in some type of financial challenge, which the city of Chicago is not, you know, can easily put aside $2 million a year to buy 2,000 replacement vests to cycle through every 5 years. So that's what we're doing. Kenny, you brought something up that the used vests are donated to organizations, and you wanted to put a shout out to smaller forces if they don't have the budget that you would send them tested, well-qualified used vests for their forces. You want to just touch on that real quick?
Yeah, you know, when I was chief at Springfield, you know, we replaced our vests, but we would always test them as well. You know, the Kevlar breaks down over time, you know, and the manufacturers guarantee it for 5 years. But what we found out is that sometimes those vests would last 8, 9, 10 years, and we would run periodic tests on those. And we used to donate our vests instead of shredding them and getting rid of them to a program called Angel Vest, which basically provides vests to those departments who can't afford them throughout the country. You know, I was kind of shocked today when you said that. I've heard of some very small departments where part-time officers, they got to buy their own equipment for vests. But for a world-class city like the city of Chicago to have to provide these officers going to buy their own vest, I mean, that's kind of dumbfounding to me, to be honest with you. In fact, if there's some legislators out there that can hear this today, I challenge you. I think a vest in the protection of our men and women out there is the most vital thing. They're putting their life on the line every day for our citizens. There should be some legislation out there to mandate that departments provide vests for all officers in the state of Illinois. And so if you're a legislator and you hear this, I challenge you. And I appreciate you, and I'm willing to work with you to try to pass that going forward. But we need something out there, you know. It's not an option anymore. When I started, you know, back 28 years ago, 30 years ago, it was optional to wear a vest, you know. And then we got to the point within 3 or 4 years, everybody had to wear a vest. It was mandated. This is essential equipment for our men and women. And it should be provided by the departments.
Dave, I don't know how it's not an OSHA violation.
Dave, maybe you get in touch with some of those aldermen up in Chicago and invite them to do some ride-alongs with CPD.
I have a really close friend who's an alderman there, and so I will definitely he knows about this, so I'm sure, and he definitely appreciates, you know, what CPD does on a daily basis. But I will text him when I get off and just, you know, it might be something that he might want to champion as well. So I'll definitely put a bug in his ear, Dave.
All right. And I look forward to having you on the show tomorrow, Chief Berg.
I'll be ready, brother. Yep.
All right. Well, boys and men, I should say, thank you for joining us this week. Thank you, Kenny, for jumping on as the ILACP representative. Chief Brigeman, thank you for joining us down in O'Fallon. Chief Byrd up in DeKalb. This has been the latest edition of Behind the Badge, Illinois. I think what we're going to talk about next week will be the de-escalation. I think Chief Brigeman touched on it, Chief Byrd touched on it, how the social workers de-escalate the situation. I think we should dive deeper into that. So I think that'll be our topic for the next episode. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Like and share.